You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good morning, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour. It's a beautiful day here in South Florida, and I cringe to think about what tomorrow's going to look like up in the Northeast. You know, I used to live in New Hampshire, north of Boston, when I flew out of Boston about 12 years ago, and I remember some snowstorms where we got 4 or 5 feet of snow in one night. Oh, goodness gracious. The shoveling and everything else associated with that and just trying to get around is going to be a mess. But you know what? It's going to be really sunny and really cold on Sunday after it all passes through. So we'll say our prayers for those folks up in the Northeast and hope that they can weather the kind of stuff that, honestly, they're used to weathering. All right, we've got a fantastic guest today. We're going to bring her on in just a moment. But first, a couple of administrative items. February 14th, yes, it's Valentine's Day. Do not forget your lovely bride or wonderful husband. Get them something, some flowers, a little card, anything, chocolates, you know, if they're on a diet, don't get them chocolates. But enjoy with them. Now, we're going to be broadcasting that morning. Not that I won't be taking my lovely wife out to dinner, but we've got to do a broadcast because we have a great opportunity to talk with Mike Cialavant. Let me say his name right. Civolino, yes, a good Italian name. He's with the Terry Lakin Action Fund and, of course, was involved in Officer's Oath, the book, and is a part of the American Patriot Foundation. Now, Terry Lakin himself may have a chance to call in. If you don't know who I'm talking about, he is the medical officer in the Army, a lieutenant colonel, who refused to deploy because he said that President Obama is not fit to be commander-in-chief. He's not under the Constitution. He could not be allowed to be the president. And he's absolutely right. And we went into it a couple days ago with David Mercaldo. Who's David Mercaldo? Well, 2 days ago, we did an interview with David Mercaldo. Now, he's known as America's storyteller. He's a playwright, author, and a lot of other things. But one of the things he was involved in, and that wasn't necessarily the purpose of the interview, but he did some short stories and, you know, little interview inserts into the book, Officer's Oath, of the many people who had contributed to Terry's case. So David Mercaldo, he was just on the show a couple days ago. And, of course, the author who assisted Terry in writing his book was Jack Cashel. And if you know of Jack and his many great articles in American Thinker, as well as other great publications, he's a great author and a good conservative. So it's a great book, and we may get a chance to talk directly to Terry, but, you know, he's a doctor, works hard, 12-hour days. He may have a break to call in, so we don't know. But his right-hand man, Mike Civolino, will be with us. I hope I pronounce this. I don't pronounce it. Italian names very good. I'm bad at that. Names in Espanol, I have no problems. But, anyway, so we're looking forward to that. It is Valentine's Day. Now, of course, you all know that you can download these shows anytime after they've played, and you can stream them anytime after they've played. So please do that. We do get lots and lots of downloads, and so that's great. So if you're listening to a download even right now, thank you for downloading or streaming it, and we appreciate you joining us in this manner. Of course, if you're listening live, as many people do, you feel free to call in. A lot of people are timid and don't like to call in. I've had people call in. And on their phone because they don't even have, internet capability. And I've asked them if they wanted to say something because you can listen on the phone. And you don't have to call in to make a comment. You can just call in and listen on the phone. And they say, no, I just want to listen. So we understand. But the number is, in case you don't know, 310-982-4145. So let's move right on to our guest today, Lori Cardoza Moore. How are you today, ma'am?
I'm well, Commander. How are you in sunny South Florida? I envy you.
Yeah, it's great. It's probably going to – it was 80 degrees yesterday. I don't know if it's going to get quite that high today, but it's a beautiful day here.
Oh, it's a tough life.
Yeah, it's just you know, there's not even there's some clouds actually. I got to spin on now there's some clouds, but it's a nice day, and it's probably not we haven't had rain in a while. I wish we would, because I live on a lake, and the lake's getting lower and lower, and that typically happens. But this spring we'll get lots and lots of rain, and it'll fill back up. But well, listen, you started an organization called Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. And for everybody out there, you go check out the website. It's pjtn.org. That's pjtn.org. And they have a Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, just type in a search for Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. You got to go check out what they're doing. But, Lori, explain to us why you started this organization.
Well, it really started on 9/11. That was kind of the candle that was lit in my heart. It was after years of studying the Bible. And our message really is to a Christian audience. And if we look at the numbers in the United States of America alone, and even around the globe, Tom, most of the people on the planet are Christians. And when I saw what happened to 9/11 that day, you know, I was standing, I was in the our classroom. I was homeschooling my children, our five kids. And a friend of mine called me, and she said, "Are you watching TV?" I said, "No." She said, "Turn on the TV." I turn it on, and all five of my kids, the youngest of which was two on my hip, were watching the second plane fly into the Twin Towers. And I said to my kids, the oldest of which was 12, right out of my mouth, I said, "You know, the life that you children know as kids will not be the life you know as adults." I knew immediately we were under attack. I was raised in a military family. You know, we know the threat of Islam has kind of been looming large on the horizon, has hit us in foreign countries, but had never hit us like it did on 9/11. Of course, we saw the 1993 World Trade Center attacks. So we were getting a little bit of a taste of it, but it really had not registered. But 9/11 really changed things. And about 6 months after 9/11, I had spent a lot of time praying, seeking the Lord on what was happening to our country. And I heard that the state of Alabama was introducing a resolution to support the state of Israel. And I knew immediately that that was something that we needed to do here in Tennessee. There were several states who followed us, Florida being one of them. And all of our states adopted resolutions supporting Israel and her war on terror. Because, you know, as Bibi Netanyahu said that day, we are all Americans now. But the reality is that we, as Americans, finally understood what Israel has been enduring in her neighborhood. And now, of course, that neighborhood has gotten smaller, and the threat of radical Islam has come to our territory. And so that's really why we started Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. It was founded in 2005. Our mission is to educate Christians about their biblical responsibility to stand with Israel and the Jewish people. And we accomplish that, Tom, by producing award-winning programs and media to distribute to Christians around the globe, so that we're reaching Christians and showing them biblically that we cannot stand back and allow the nations of the world to align themselves against Israel and demand that she divide her land or weaken her posture in the Middle East. And the United States has always enjoyed a solid relationship with Israel. Israel has always been able to count on the U.S. to come to her aid, to stand with her through difficult times. Unfortunately, with the current administration, we are seeing that that being squandered, that relationship being marginalized. And but, you know, the polls do show here in America that anywhere from 78% to 82% of Americans support Israel. Of that 78% to 82%, you have about 68% who do not want to fund the Arabs, the Palestinians. And of that same group, they also believe that our tax dollars are going to fund terrorist attacks against Israelis. And, of course, we wouldn't tolerate that here in the United States of America as citizens. We wouldn't tolerate, you know, missiles being lobbed, 14,000 missiles being lobbed on communities in Israel proper. we would target. We would respond back in kind. And, of course, our government, the current administration, is pushing Israel's back against the wall. We understand now that Obama is going to be making a trip to Israel for the first time as a president, two terms. He's going to be making a trip to Israel to meet with the prime minister, and it's suggested that Obama will be going over there to make sure that Bibi puts in place a more liberal, centrist to more liberal-leaning government so that the peace process can move forward. The problem with that, Tom, is that if we try to push Israel to divide the land that God calls his, we will reap what we are sowing. And there's a great scripture I love to quote out of the prophet Joel, which God told the prophet in the latter days he was going to wipe out the nations of the world because they were dividing up his land. And we, as a Judeo-Christian nation, should not be allowing or tolerating an administration that continues to delegitimize Israel's right to her God-given ancient homeland.
Well, you know, very well said. Hey, you know, one of the things that has always bothered me, when you mentioned that people feel that we're giving money that's just being used to attack Americans, to some of these Arab countries, absolutely. And, in fact, the Palestinian refugee camps. Now, I've never gotten this. They're refugees from what? It's like going out on the street and finding some homeless people and going, oh, they're refugees. From what? From their crappy lifestyle, from their, you know, loser lifestyle, from being losers. And I'll say that because those refugee camps have been there for dozens and dozens of years. I mean, I don't know, 40, 50 years. Refugees. They're refugees from I don't know what. But the United States of America gives more support money to the Palestinian refugee camps than anybody in the world. There's no Arab nation. I mean, we give the vast majority, European countries, mostly Great Britain, give most of the rest. The next highest contributor is somebody like Saudi Arabia with like maybe 5% of the money. These are people living on welfare forever, and it's our money. And do Palestinians attack Israelis? Did Palestinians run over to help Iraq while we were open and had our troops in there, and were Palestinians found in Iraq that were working with Al-Qaeda? And absolutely. So, yeah, our money is paying to kill Americans, and we should cut all that money off. Absolutely.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, the electorate is not paying close enough attention to this issue. You know, we just agreed to send 20 F-16s over to Egypt. This is another clear example of us arming our enemies against our ally. We saw the F-16s being sent. We see the tanks being sent over there. We're sending $2 billion every year to help shore up the Morsi government. The Morsi government is a Muslim Brotherhood government. They are terrorists. And it is against our federal laws to even be giving the money. But even members of Congress, nobody is pushing this issue. And this is what is so so egregious, is that we, the people of the United States, are not holding our elected officials accountable. We should not be funding Morsi. Mubarak, yes, he was a dictator. But at least he was keeping things calm. At least he was willing to negotiate and keep the peace with Israel. At least the Christians that were living under Mubarak were living reasonably comfortable. They weren't being attacked. Now, since the Muslim Brotherhood has come in, now we see Christians being slaughtered in the streets. And now the very real possibility of an attack of Egypt using our military capability against Israel is very real. And this is very disturbing. You know, we're watching our government slip away. And Tom, to me, the greatest message that we can send right now to the citizens of the United States of America is that if we do not stand up, we are going to end up getting a government that is unlike anything this country, since its founding, has ever seen. We are losing our freedoms. We are not defending our friends and allies in the Middle East, and therefore weakening and allowing the enemies to come in to our borders to encamp. We even have Muslim Brotherhood members who are part of this administration. And because we don't know this, because we're not staying in tune and aware of what's going on, we're not speaking out. We're not contacting our congressmen and senators. And you guys have some incredible, outstanding leaders in Congress, Ileana Ross Leitinen and so many others who are speaking out, Rubio. And it's but they're not going to speak out, and they're not going to hold the administration accountable unless they hear from us. And it's so critically important that if we as a nation want to be blessed, then we've got to get in line with what God's his blessing says, what his covenant says. And God told Abraham in Genesis chapter 12 that he would bless those who would bless Abraham and his descendants, but he would also curse those who would curse them. And if we as Americans, the majority of us as Americans, support Israel, support the Jewish people, are opposed to anti-Semitism, then we should be the ones speaking out, because judgment will come on this nation. And it's unfortunate that we have the administration, that we're going to have to deal with another 4 years of this administration going into, you know, what is clearly a very disturbing time in history. And we don't have a secure United States of America like we once had. It's very disturbing. But I find it interesting, Tom, because it seems that Israel is arising. Bibi Netanyahu, to me, represents leadership now. He is the world leader. You have Stephen Harper to the north of us, in the Prime Minister of Canada, who has taken a strong stand against terrorism and in support of Israel as well. But there are no other nations. And now our position is being weakened in the Middle East. And look at the position, look at the foreign policies, how the foreign policies have been a complete failure by the Obama administration. And how do we know? Look at how the Middle East, you know, we saw the Arab Spring starting in Tunisia and then spread to Egypt. And now the Middle East is on fire. We've got Syria where people, they're saying, I'm hearing reports that up to 100,000 people have been slaughtered. And that's not been official news. It's unofficial, but they're saying they can't really know the numbers. But we know we're at least over 60,000 people being slaughtered. We've got Iran, who's on the edge of having the nuclear capabilities to not just wipe out Israel, but also attack the United States in our side of the hemisphere. It's very disturbing, but we don't have the leadership in Washington anymore. And unless we, the people, communicate with our congressmen, and remember, our congressmen are the closest representation to the people. And that's why we have got to be making the phone calls to challenge what this administration is doing, and then challenge our representatives to represent us well and to represent Israel well in Congress.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. You know, going back to the PLO, a really good article written back in June by Barry Rubin, where did all the billions of dollars given to the Palestinian Authority go? He asked, can you please explain to me why 20 years after the Oslo Accords and billions of dollars in foreign aid to the Palestinian Authority, they haven't built one modern hospital?
They're building malls. You know, you see these refugee, you talked a little bit ago about these refugee camps. Well, they use the refugee camps to seek the sympathy of the world. So they garner all these millions of dollars, but you never see the images of these malls with all these European products that these Arabs can purchase that live in Gaza. You know, it's absolutely deplorable how we have been snookered. We've been fooled, and we can't even pay our bills here in the United States.
Right.
But we're sending billions of dollars over to the Arabs, whether it's going to be in Egypt, whether it's going to be in Gaza, or whether it's going to be in Judea and Samaria, the biblical homeland where the Arabs reside. We're wasting and squandering our money. But again, it all comes back to, are we going to take the stand, Tom? Are we going to speak up as Americans and say, you know what, enough is enough. You've squandered our money. You've driven this economy into the ground. It's time to change the leadership. And we've got elections coming up in 2014, and I hope that people are paying attention, and I hope that people will show up, because we do know as a result of the last elections, there was 6 million Christians who stayed home and did not engage in a political process by voting. That is outrageous. And yep. I know that people had issues with Romney and his position, his faith, but to allow this leader to come back in to destroy this country and not, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done throughout our political process. And we need to start finding leaders who are going to take us back to the values that made this country strong, Tom. Not people who are going to go and travel across the world and apologize for our capitalism, apologize for the freedom that we enjoy around the here in the United States, but what we represent around the world.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say this. Any Christian out there that didn't vote for Romney because he's a Mormon ought to be absolutely ashamed of themselves, because what they did by not going and voting is, to me, the equivalent of they had a problem with something one of the 12 apostles, original 12 apostles, said, and so they decided to hang out with Judas instead. They said, yeah, I'll choose this guy over this guy because I didn't. He offended me in what he said over here. You know, it was nothing that was against the Bible. But, you know, I mean, it's really just disgraceful. And so if that's the case, and I'm sure it is the case with some people, then they're just as bad as the worst bigot or racist out there. And they've allowed – what they've really done is they've harmed you and me and the country by being somebody who has voted in the past but refused to vote because of some – what I would call minor ideology, and let our country go into this slide, this huge downhill slide toward socialism. I want to just say a couple things because it gets along the line of what you're talking about. But it's something that is insidious in the same way. We've got Lloyd Marcus on American Thinker talks about this all the time, about how the black community is supportive of Obama, and yet much of that community is evangelical Christian. And yet when Obama takes these positions on abortion pills, and that they're adamantly opposed to, they just look the other way. They look the other way. Well, all of a sudden, principles and morals don't count. So Lloyd can go after that group. The group that I go after is the group that I can without being called a racist, and that is Mexican-Americans. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad term. I normally say Americans of Hispanic heritage or Mexican heritage, particularly because that's the vast majority of illegal immigrants in this country come from Mexico. Americans need to understand another insidious thing going on here, and that is that illegal immigrants, particularly Mexicans, are socialists. They're never going to vote Republican. There's nothing you can do except give them freebies and make the government bigger, which is what the Democrat Party is about, and conservatives are not about that, whether you're independent or Republican or whatever you are. We're not for that. They'll never vote for you. Doesn't matter how much you give them. They're always going to vote Democrat. So we cannot give them a path to citizenship, and we cannot give them amnesty. So we've got a lot of factors going on here that the Democrat Party is working to destroy this country, and the Arab-Muslim connection is just one of them. And it's a very insidious one. Look at what has happened to Europe. And now, one question I have for you, Lori, that I think is very important. Based on this recent election, the recent elections in Israel, what does that mean for them as well as us, on just a national political scene as well as a spiritual scene?
Well, on the political scene, it's interesting to see how the electorate in Israel is moving toward the right, and it's forcing their government. And see, this is what's so important, and I hope your listeners are really hearing this, and why it's important that we, the people, we are responsible for the government that we have. And if you look and see what happened in Israel, Israelis are concerned about what's happening externally around them. They see the threats. They realize that Iran is a major problem in their part of the world. But what they're doing is they're focusing on the inside. They're focusing on strengthening their government, strengthening their state, to be able to endure what is coming. So there, the electorate is moving more to the right. There was a party, a religious party, that does not believe in giving up the land that gained a lot of seats in Israel. So to me, that was very telling, but it also showed me that it's forcing now the government, the administration in place in Israel, it's forcing them now to adjust their policies, which is going to fly in the face of Obama and other world leaders, because other world leaders want Israel to divide the land. They want to create a so-called Palestinian state. So it's going to be we see a positive move in Israel compared to what's happening in the United States. Now, this is going to create a lot of friction between the Prime Minister of Israel and the Obama administration, because we know his administration, the Secretary of State, is going to be pushing during the second term for a two-state solution. There will never be a two-state solution. Israel will never, it just will not happen. Israel will never give up the land. Circumstances and events will never unfold to divide that land. There will be an attempt to do it, but it's never going to happen. And if we look at what's happening around the Middle East, we're going to see, as we watch what's happening, you're going to see greater pressure from all these countries. But all we have to do is look, and I also want to remind the listeners, Gaza was given to the Arabs, to the so-called Palestinians. Look at what it got Israel. They said, look, if you just give us Gaza, we'll have peace, we can make progress, we'll move forward. It never happened. It never will happen. They speak in English out of one side of their mouth and in Arabic out of the other side. And while they're telling the English-speaking world, oh, yes, we want all this, we saw that with Arafat, we're watching it with Mahmoud Abbas. And let me tell you, Mahmoud Abbas is not ever going to want to have, is not ever going to be satisfied with Israel living side by side with a so-called Palestinian state. The man wrote his paper. He graduated from the university in Moscow. He wrote his paper on the Holocaust, that it was it didn't really happen. And if you look at the way he's governed and his policies and some of the things that he's even publicly said in Arabic to his people, he is never going to be satisfied with a Palestinian state residing alongside a Jewish state. That is the problem. So it's going to become, what's happening in the Middle East is going to become even more volatile. And what we're trying to do is, again, reach the Christian community, educate them as to why biblically, because one of the things that I found is that if you base your position on a political position, political winds blow and they change, and people's ideals and views politically can change. But if you base your belief on the book, on the Bible, on the Word of God, those are people, once they know biblically a position that we are supposed to take, once we understand that, we will be committed to that position for life. And we can share that message with our children and our children's children. And that is the key. That's why we've got to reach these people. You talked about the black community. Let me tell you, the black community is also, as we discussed, a faith community. There are many black evangelical churches. The sad thing about the black community with regards to Israel is that they don't see the plight, they don't see the similarity of their own historical plight with the plight of the Jewish people. Both communities have been persecuted. You would think that the black community would come out in full force in support of Israel and protecting the Jews. If we go back to the civil rights movement, it was rabbis who were walking in the streets, walking side by side with Martin Luther King Jr. We saw that happening in the United States, but we have forgotten. And so we don't have the support of the black community. So that's an important group of people that we need to reach. The other community you talked about was the Hispanic community. We have Cubans. We have Latin Americans. We have Mexicans who are residing in this country. And they, too, are people of faith. And that's why our message to them about their biblical responsibility, because we as Christians do not want to come down against Almighty God. Because one day we will all stand before him, and he will open up that book of life. And when we stand before him, he's going to ask us, you know, I put you on the earth during this time when the nation of Israel was reborn in a day, like I told the prophet Isaiah. what did you do to stand with your brethren? Because remember, Jesus said, whatever you do to the least of these, my brethren, that you do unto me. And sadly, this is not being taught from the pulpits of this country. It's not being taught in the white evangelical church. It's not being taught from the black evangelical church. It's not being taught from the Hispanic evangelical church or any of the churches for the most part. That's why what we're doing in producing media and then broadcasting our films around the globe. In fact, we are getting ready. We're hosting our biggest media event of the year, which is the International Christian Prayer and Action Event for Israel at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, March 3rd through the 5th. At that convention, they bring as many as 6,000 Christian broadcasters, even from Latin America, even from Europe, who come from around the world looking for new programming. We provide award-winning programming for these different outlets around the globe. In fact, our most recent film that was completed, The Forgotten People, Christianity and the Holocaust, was broadcast into over 200 countries nationwide. In fact, this year we'll be introducing our Spanish translation of the Forgotten People. This film is so critically important, especially today, because we go back and show Christians historically how Christians were silent during the Spanish Inquisition, during the pogroms. They were silent during the Holocaust and were silent again today. And if you look, Tom, at the similarities, and that's what we do in the film, we bridge the similarities of Nazi Germany to today, to even modern day America. How could you have, when I was studying and doing the research to produce this film, I always asked the question, where was the church in Nazi Germany? Germany, because at the time, Germany was considered a Christian nation. It was the most educated nation. At that time, people were sending their kids to German universities from around the world. It was also the nation that gave us the birth of the Reformation. So you have to ask yourself, where was the church? Why were they silent? How come Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Jerusalem, only has 23,000 documented righteous Gentiles who were Christians who helped to protect and save Jewish lives? How could that happen? Let's fast forward to the United States of America. Here we are, 2013. You have the rise of another charismatic leader. And that charismatic leader is offering hope and change and healthcare and a way out of the financial crisis that the nation has found itself in. And then you start finding people delegitimizing or dehumanizing people's rights to their land, like the Jews in Israel. And slowly, slowly, you start convincing the people. That's why, Tom, it's so critically important that we as Christians know our Bible and know our position. And that's why we're producing these films, to ask Christians, when they watch these films, stop and take a breath. Think about what is unfolding before your eyes. What are you going to do? We can all do something. We can either support our efforts at PJTN, and I want to encourage again your audience to visit our website at pjtn.org and sign up to get our newsletters and our action alerts and media blasts. Stay informed, and then we can pick up the phone. We can contact our elected officials and allow our voices to be heard. We have to communicate, but we also need to tune in and watch our programs, order the films, and then share them with your family and friends. This is going to take, we didn't get here overnight, and it's going to take some time, but we have to start now, because if we don't, who else is going to stand with Israel? The United States of America has always been the country that Israel could count on, and now we can't. And the beauty of using media is we're not trying to force what we believe. We're just presenting the facts. and allowing people, as they're sitting in front of their televisions or sitting in front of their computer screens, to allow them to think quietly about the information that they're hearing and seeing on the screen, and what are they going to do about it. Not everybody is going to produce films, and not everybody is going to get in front of a crowd of hundreds of people and bring this message. But we all can do something, and that's what we're trying to do. In fact, we've got another film that we're working on right now called Israel Indivisible, and I'm telling you, Tom, it's a timely piece, because this documentary is going to expose the historical, the archaeological, the legal, and the biblical evidence to prove that Israel has rights to the land. And it should be Christians around the world who should be speaking up and challenging our own governments, whether it be the United States, whether it be the UK, whether it be in South Africa, New Zealand. We hear from Christians all over the world who watch our films, and they are ordering the films and giving them to their elected officials or making phone calls to their parliamentarians and letting them know how they feel. If we can mobilize the force, the church, around the globe to take a stand, then Israel can count on Christians. You know, it's this administration is not going to be a strong supporter of Israel. And the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, knows that although this administration here in the U.S. is not a committed ally and friend, they know they can count on the American Christians. They know because they've heard our voices. They know because we still go to Israel. In fact, with everything surrounding Israel right now, with all the challenges that she's facing in her neighborhood, tourism is still up. People are still going to the land, to the Holy Land. And I'm telling you, for your listeners who have never been, you need to go. It is unlike you've ever experienced, ever. It's just absolutely phenomenal. But anyhow, the film Israel Indivisible should be completed by the summer of this year. And we've also got another program called Focus on Israel, which will actually be broadcasting very soon on Total Living Network, on WND.com, and the Hebrew Roots Network.org. So your listeners can also, if they go to the website and sign up, they'll be getting an announcement to let them know when those shows are going to be broadcasting. It's a 30-minute program, weekly program, where we discuss issues that you'll not hear discussed in the mainstream media. And you won't hear these issues discussed from the pulpits of your churches. But they're all being produced to give Christians more information to look at the events that we're living in at this time through a biblical lens to understand what is our responsibility. And, you know, we as Christians living in the United States, Tom, we've been blessed with the freedoms that we've had. And we have a responsibility to be a light to the surrounding nations of the world, even to Israel, to encourage them to rise up and be the light that they are called to be in this hour. So it's very important that we reach more Christians, because I believe, as I said earlier, if you can educate Christians about their biblical responsibility, about the fact that they were born right now, they did not come into the world 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago. We're living now when the modern state of Israel, when Israel was reborn. And we have a responsibility in our lifetime to do what we can do to uphold God's kingdom and to uphold that covenant and that promise that he made to the Jewish people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I was looking on your website, and you've got a link that says get involved. And that's where I tell people to start off. Go there and see what you can do to get involved. Some great suggestions, and you can get in contact with the folks at Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, and get involved, even if it's on a small scale. But there are many of my listeners are Tea Partiers and 912ers and conservatives that are in existing organizations. This might be one of the, do a screening of one of the films that's here on the website at your next meeting. And that's where you can get started and get involved. Because quite honestly, if this administration allows for the further erosion, if not destruction, of Israel, which is not going to happen. But if it were to allow that or be willing to allow that, what is he willing to allow for this country? I'll tell you what, the same thing. And as just a side note, his campaign slogan for this last election was "Forward," and that was one of Adolf Hitler's propaganda slogans once he was in power, was "Forward," because we want people to move forward and not think about the past and not think about what's been done to them, what's been destroyed. It's just keep looking straight forward and keep coming forward and keep your focus on what I'm, the lies that I'm telling you. And that's exactly what Hitler did to his people. And so in any case, that's my two cents there. But Lori, thank you so much for coming on today. And anything else you want to tell the people out there? That they, I think you've covered it all, but is there any last thing you want to tell them before call it a day?
Well, I think to just again remind your audience that even if they invite us to come to your community to do a screening of the film, we are going to be in Fort Myers at Kaiser University on March 18th. And so that's an opportunity. But if you're interested, if anyone in the audience is interested in hosting a screening, contact our office. We can do it at a university on campus. We can do it at a church. And then we reach out to the community, and especially with our Forgotten People, Christianity, and the Holocaust. That documentary is so critically important for right now because we do bridge the gap to what happened in Nazi Germany. And you hit the nail on the head. You see a lot of similarities to Hitler and communism with this administration. And people think, oh, there's no way. Well, you know, the EPA was conducting a study, and this will bring you chills, and you can, your audience can Google it. But at North Carolina Chapel Hill, I think it was back in November, there was an article that came out. It didn't get much mainstream news coverage, which I'm not surprised, but the EPA was conducting a study where they were paying people $12 an hour to breathe in carbon monoxide through a tube that was connected to a vehicle outside of the building. Now, why in the world would we conduct a study, an EPA study? Remember, the EPA is part of our government. Why would this administration allow such a study? That's exactly what they were doing in Nazi Germany. They were trying to gas people, and they're paying people. And the sad thing, Tom, is that people were stupid enough to do the study, to sign up, make the $12 to breathe in carbon monoxide through a tube. It's frightening to see the similarities of what we're doing here and what happened back then. But if we don't open up our eyes, if we're not educated, if somebody's not telling us this, we're in trouble. So, yes, I would encourage your listeners again to contact our office, host a screening of the film, and let us come to your community and let's start working together to reach more Christians and people of conscience to take a stand. It's so critically important that we do it right now. And of course, signing up to get our newsletters, our media and action alerts so that they can stay informed and they can share that information with people on their email list. You know, it's the internet can be a crucial tool to winning this battle, but it starts by educating people. And it starts, and of course, it starts with us. You know, you took the initiative to start this program, Tom, and I just thank God for you. And I thank you for the reach that you have. But there are other people who are listening in your audience who can do something in their community as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Lori Cardoza-Moore of PJT, Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. Thank you so much for being here. Keep up the good work. We are so lucky to have folks like you that get actively involved and just sit on your laurels, and it inspires everybody else. I really appreciate that. And God bless. We'll keep up with how things are going with your website. And if there's any significant changes or anything going on, we'll get you back on the show here in the future.
That sounds great. God bless you too, Commander, and keep up the good work as well.
All right. Thanks, Laura. You have a great weekend, and stay safe. All right, everybody. Well, yeah, that was great. Well, we've had some great guests on this week and some good stuff. I'll just give you some of my afterthoughts on some of this stuff here. Lori covered everything just great, but a few little tidbits here. Back when I was in the Navy, we had an area out over the desert in Arizona that we used for practice, war games, and that kind of stuff. It wasn't a real large area because it bordered on the bordered on Mexico, so we didn't have a lot of area to work with. And one of the things I used to do when I gave a air combat lecture on tactics, I would take a slide that showed that area that everybody was familiar with, all the fighter pilots were familiar with, and overlay Israel onto that so they could see just how small Israel was. And the Day War, which was back in June of 1967 from the 5th to the 10th, how they operated their air campaign, what they were able to do in such a small air base. We go out there and we kind of set up and go like, okay, ready, go, and do that stuff. To be surrounded by enemies and have such little airspace to maneuver in is a thing. And so the purpose of showing that to the fighter pilots was to inspire them that if the Israelis could do this, you could do it. You have to one day be in a confined space and have to operate the way they did. And so it certainly is a study in air tactics. Now, I have to say this. Watching some of the recreations as told by living fighter pilots from the Israeli Air Force, the Egyptians are really crappy pilots, and so are the Syrians. Oh, my gosh. They just suck. So, but they had a lot of numbers, and because they were able to control the airspace, the Israelis were also able to control the movement on the ground, which really restricted the tank movement and troop movement in Golan Heights and other portions surrounding Israel. They cannot afford to give up one piece of land. And this idea of a right to land that apparently the Palestinians have, let me tell you about that. Mexicans like to say they have a right to part of Texas. They have no right to it. One, we pay for it, but even if we didn't, we took it. All over the world, there are countries that fought neighboring countries and took land. And now it's their land. It's recognized throughout the world as their land. That's how it works. You might not like it, but that's how it works. If you fight somebody and take some land, it's yours now. And they can either negotiate it back or they can take it back by force, which typically doesn't happen. So for those folks that think that the Palestinians deserve that land, you might think they deserve it. It's not theirs. It's Israel. There's no such thing as the Palestinian state, Palestinian lands, or whatever you want to call it. It's all Israel. That's like saying that Texas is somehow part of Mexico. Oh, and I want to clear another thing up, because I said I'm going to do this on every show. Every show. I want to make this clear. If you didn't hear earlier in the show, illegal Mexican immigrants are socialists. They come from a culture of class warfare, government handouts, and they like big government. They will never vote Democrat. Now, one of the lies perpetrated by groups like La Raza, which is an extremely racist organization, they'll claim that you're a racist for not wanting to give amnesty to all the people that have violated our sovereignty and then impact your lives directly. But which is, of course, that's true, but it is not true that they have any rights here in this country or deserve any rights. But to try and tell you that, well, Mexicans used to own the Southwest, and you never bought that from us, maybe part of Texas, maybe Texas, but Mexicans did not live in the Southwest. That's an outright lie. And they'll try and link it also to the Aztec Empire, which was way down south in Mexico, what is known as Mexico today. Who resided in the Southwest prior to settlers and our armies moving through? American Indians, North American Indians. North American Indians hated Mexicans and would kill them on sight. So Mexicans did not venture very far beyond throughout Texas, South and Central Texas. From that point on, throughout the Southwest, inhabited by North American Indians, until we started going through and clearing out the Indians and putting them on reservations, that's when the Mexicans started moving in. Prior to that, no. So they have absolutely no claim. So in reality, the European settlers were in the Southwest long before any Mexicans were. Okay. We'll clear that up. And I got to talk about that every show. I want people to understand illegal immigrants are never going to vote for Republicans. So you need to stop, put an absolute end to this path to citizenship, and not going to vote Republican. Now, Democrats are for it because they know that they're going to vote Democrat. So they'll turn it into this compassion, whole compassion. But before we finish up here, just read a little bit to you from Greg Gutfeld's book, The Joy of Hate. He's talking about the remake of The Manchurian Candidate. This is in one of his chapters. And I want to read a little bit to you. Really, this is about how the left wants you to be tolerant, but they're not tolerant of a single thing, unless you agree with them on everything. The director, Jonathan Demme, admits in his commentary on the DVD that he avoided making Saddam Hussein's forces the bad guys because he didn't want to negatively stereotype Muslims. I'd call Demme, now this is, of course, Greg Gutfeld here speaking. I'm just reading right out of the book for you. I'd call Demme an idiot, but I don't want to stereotype idiots. Never mind that this was insulting to Muslims. Demme must assume all Muslims see themselves as Hussein's henchmen. Trying to avoid appearing intolerant, other glasses on, intolerant pretzels you beyond physical possibility. Let me quote Epstein's piece about Demme's film. And Epstein, who is Epstein? Epstein is a guy who wrote an article for the Wall Street Journal called Corporate Executives Hollywood's Demon. Not only was neither Saddam Hussein nor Iraq mentioned in a film about the Iraq-Kuwait war, but the Manchurian Corporation's technicians rewired the brains of abducted U.S. soldiers with false memories of an al-Qaeda-type jihadist so that they will lay blame for terrorist acts committed by American businessmen, innocent Muslim jihadists. Good Lord. So in real life, we have terrorist acts which are committed by terrorists, but get this, in Hollywood, that's idiotic. Yep, perhaps we were all brainwashed into thinking terrorists are Islamic. Remember, in New York, that beautiful September morning when planes flew into those buildings, ha, that never happened. Well, at least the way you saw it. Through collective brainwashing, the entire country was made to believe that it was Al-Qaeda, when in fact, Dick Cheney was operating those planes from an underwater volcano sea lab made of human skulls. I'll bet he had a calico cat in his lap as he did it. There, I just created in 5 minutes a treatment for Demme's next film. I expect a producer's credit and cameo as an angry dwarf. If you've ever seen Greg Gutfeld do his commentary, his little monologue on The Five, or even and Red Eye at Night, that's what this whole book is like. One of his, it's like a big long monologue. So if you like Greg Gutfeld, you'll love this book on The Joy of Hate. So why are corporations the perfect villain for movies? They don't complain. If you make a gay villain, GLAAD will write 70 versions of the same nasty letter and then picket your children's piano recital. Remember, The Sopranos and all the guff they got from making mobsters Italian? What the hell, should they be Swedish? Something tells me corporations like Halliburton don't employ representatives who review scripts with the studios. It's not that they don't have better things to do, which they do. They realize no one will listen. But there's a root issue here. The evil corporations are really a stand-in for hatred of America. As Calvin Coolidge once said, the chief business of America is business. But for Hollywood, we've just been too good at it. How dare we devise the best political and economic system in history? Do you know the disparities that creates with Marxist collectives struggling for a neutral carbon footprint? And once again, America, for most of those people, is really a stand-in for daddy, who was successful, made money, and sent me to an all-expensive liberal arts college. So what's the end game for proponents of repressive tolerance when it comes to Occupy Wall Street? My guess is, unless they were hardcore anarchists of the Adbusters variety, they might not have one. But it does give us the sense of a world where everything is permitted and no one dares to question the damage caused by those who seek to destroy rather than create. More to the point, what happens when mommy and daddy no longer care if Junior shits in his pants? You get a lot of shit, at least in Los Angeles. As the weather grew colder, the cops knew it was time to strike, as even the most liberal mayors were starting to regret cozying up to the anarchists and drifters, which is what was happening in Los Angeles at the start of December 2011, where sanitation officials started hauling away 30 tons of debris from the Occupy LA encampment, not including the protesters. Now, I can tell you as an Eagle Scout, when you go camping, you clean up after yourself. But no, not the occupiers, because, you know, somebody else should have to do that. They shouldn't have to do that. They're above all of that. Now, 30 tons is a lot of trash. To give you an idea of the mass of that, I did some calculations, and then I lost them at a bar. But if all you see is heaps of garbage, then you're missing two bigger points. The first is an old one. No one cares about things they don't own. To quote the great Milton Friedman, when everybody owns something, in other words, collectivism, remember the president likes to talk about collectivism and spreading the wealth, when everybody owns something, nobody owns it, and nobody has a direct interest in maintaining or improving its condition. Milton was a smart guy, and that one sentence succinctly explains why you will never poop in your driveway, but a protester will. All right, that's straight out of Greg Gutfeld's book. So if you're listening for the last few minutes, just tune in. That was from Greg Gutfeld's book, The Joy of Hate. Get it. Get it on your Kindle. It's great. I couldn't stop reading. I couldn't put it down. You really enjoy it. It's just like one of his monologues, except it's a full book of monologue on the influence of the supposed tolerant left. All right. Once again, let's see. For next week, we've got on the 14th of February, Mike Civolino of the Teddy Lakin Action Fund. He is also part of the Officer's Oath book. In helping put that together, and the American Patriot Foundation. And we may have Terry on, so don't miss it or download it when you get a chance. But I want to thank you for being with us today. Have a great weekend. Michael Cutler's on tomorrow night. Great as always, 7 p.m. on very. And we will see you next week on the 14th or maybe earlier. Keep an eye on the Facebook and the website page because I'm always posting updates if there's going to be an earlier show earlier in the week, in case I can squeeze one in. I will post that on there. So thanks again for joining us. And don't forget about the Constitution. We'll talk some more about that next week.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.